All right, folks, welcome back to Lace Mountain and Westwire Football Podcast. Week 3 preview. Oh, yeah. Jeremy here hanging out. MWR.com is where you can find all of our previews, written stuff, my random bowl, throw to darts, whatever you want to call it, projections at some level out there. We got previews. We have all sorts of randomness. QB rankings. I'm going to, fingers crossed, get this up about the time this is posted, maybe. We'll see. Stuff's going on. But we got week 3. Full week, still mostly non-conference play, but we do have, I'm just going to get right to it. It's myself going solo this week, so deal with it, as I'm going to say. But let's just get right to the games. We have a Friday night conference game, Utah State Air Force, early game for non-conference week 3. We'll get more of these down the next couple of weeks as the season progresses to get fewer and fewer just less non-conference games. So this game, Friday night at the Academy, 6 local time, CBS Sports Network. Falcons are a lofty 9.5-point favorite, 46.5 to over-under. So with this game, kind of what have these teams been up to lately? Well, Air Force squeaked by Sam Houston State, where it was 13-3. They needed that second half outburst, I'll say, to score a few points against that Bearcat defense, which is pretty good from CUSA. Like, they've allowed only 14 to BYU, the 13. Like, they're doing pretty good defensively for who they played, and stopping that run option attack is not easy. Then we got Utah State 1-1, Air Force 2-0, and being like 10-point lines a lot, because what we've seen from Air Force is nothing amazing at the moment. Like, they've been fine, if you want to really put it that way, because they're still trying to find their footing about who the quarterback is going to be. Like, their amount of rushing attack has been okay, because they've only played Robert Morris, FCS, and Sam Houston, new FBS team. And so it's hard to get a full gauge on what the Falcons are. We know, obviously, John Lee Eldridge III is the main guy. Zach Larry at quarterback is thrown a couple times, 6 times all year. We'll see. He leads the team rushing. Owen Burke's number 2 in rushing. So this will be a good sense of, okay, a real test for Air Force for what they're going to be and what we expect them when they're playing the rest of the conference slate, and especially when they play Army and Navy down the road. So it's going to be I'm wondering what they're going to be like, because we don't know. It's still a lot of unknowns. Like, okay, they're 2-0, great. We seemingly a really good team, obviously. We think they're going to be good. But without knowing the challenges they're going to face with a team that's better in Utah State, relatively speaking, to everybody else, it's going to be kind of the first time we really know what they're going to do. So this also, Air Force is not beating Utah State. Like, it's like, will this be the first year Air Force hands Blake Anderson lost to Falcons? So there's that. But overall, the series is pretty even, but with the Falcons winning 6-11, but the past couple of years, Utah State's had their number against Anderson, despite Utah State not being great last year and the year before doing quite well. So it's kind of been up and down for Utah State. So, and last year, just kind of recap last year, Cooper Legault came in last year to be quarterback. He's the main starter now for Utah State, so he led the way against the Falcons for that win. So it'll be, with having Legault back at Utah State, so okay, what's he going to do? How's he going to handle this defense? Which, again, Falcon defense, really good. 3 points, Sam Houston State, their offense doesn't seem great. But I'm curious to what Cooper Legault and Anderson and their offense are going to do. Like, Terrell Vaughn catching the ball at Utah State, oh boy. He had, I think, 11 catches last week. Like, he was doing really good things early on in last week with Utah State playing in their matchup. And so a lot of points last year, too, which is interesting, with the over-under being, what did I say, 46.5. Last year, they scored 34. There was 34 points. Air Force gave up 34 points. I was trying to think, like, wait, who had 34? Despite Falcons obviously having a really good defense. But, like, our buddy Sean put up his preview. It's like, we don't know what offense this is for Air Force. We do know exactly, but where's the production come from? Is John Lee Eldridge or these other guys going to be the main focus? And it's tough to tell even for Utah State, because they played Iowa, lost 24-14, got down to a quick 14-0 deficit. Then they just beat the doors off Idaho State, scored nearly 80 points. A couple defensive scores, I believe a special team score as well. So it's hard to know what either team really is. I would say we know a little bit more Utah State, because while Iowa got up to 14-0 lead, they did come back and outscored them 14-10 the rest of the way, losing 24-14. So there's that to consider. Okay, how good's Iowa? They're a ranked top 25 team. We know their defense is great offense. We know the jokes about it. But I think how Air Force, if we're looking at who's going to win and why, I would say with Air Force, it's clearly the run option attack. Can they attack this Utah State defense? Can they go 3 or 4 for 100 yards? 3 or 6 passing the ball? That's always a thing of like, because on the year, Air Force only has 109 yards, 3 of 6 in 2 games. But they didn't need to really throw the ball in the first game. In the second game, they're just grinding it out. So we can see what Zach LaRue is going to do. And it could be good. Like, maybe Odenberg is a guy that's going to be legit. We look at carry numbers. John Lee Eldridge has 10. We all thought, okay, non-preseason potential player of the year, one of the best running backs in the conference. And 65 yards came on one play. So he has really 9 attempts, like 31 yards, 37 yards. I know that's not indicative because all yards count, but it's still to see one game take up majority of your total production. Unique. So we'll see, because Burke has 24 carries. Zach Lair, excuse me. It's a thing where, okay, is he going to pitch more? Is he taking the ball if he's not comfortable? Because he has the most carries by far. So it's going to be those three guys, and maybe even they have a fullback in Emmanuel Michael who maybe do kind of what Jacoby Owens did, maybe not as productive just because Owens was freaking beast and amazing. So that's something Utah State's going to have to defend and go up against. And when we look at Utah State's offense, Kubler got a lot of – he has had a weird career. Came in for that Kimmel Bowl game a couple years ago in L.A. He came in last year when Logan Bonner got injured to take over. He got hurt himself. So this is finally his time to be the guy, but he has one of the better receivers in Terrell Vaughn in the conference. They have a pretty good rushing attack. Like, we look at Rachel Fajian, but again, he has like a huge 60-yard run, so he's averaging like 12 yards a carry. But those guys aren't maybe be the guy. But Robert Briggs showed up, Devin Booth showed up. But it's all, again, Idaho State, so I don't know exactly. It's still, I don't want to say it's too early to tell, but it's always wait and see mode sometimes for these teams. What I do know is Terrell Vaughn is really good on offense. He has 3 touchdowns, a couple hundred yards, 160 yards plus. But then we look at defense for Utah State, like, okay, what are they going to do against this Air Force ground attack, which is, we know what to expect. And one thing that's not great Utah State defense, their top 2 leading tacklers, 3 of their top 4, 4 of their top 5 are all defensive backs. Only MJ Tafisi, who's really good, 14 tackles, is number 3. Everybody else is a 9, 10 plus, like Ike Larson, Anthony Switzer, all have over 10 tackles. It's not great to have your team leading tacklers be safeties or cornerbacks or whatever defensive back position to technically put in. And they only have 3 sacks on the year. And so it'll be interesting to see how they match up, because it's familiarity-wise, they know this team, clearly, because it's a conference team. That when they set divisions, they'd play each other, obviously, every year. But they do need somebody to step up because, like, quit saying like your buddy, but sacks, I'm not even sure what their TFL situation is either at the moment here, but, like, overall, sacks aren't great with just 3 in a couple games. I don't know. It's me going back and seeing, like, this is a 10-point favorite. I think Utah State, because they're a mystery team compared to last year. They're always back and forth, first half, second half team, getting beat by Weber State, nearly beating Boise State despite the score being bigger than what the end result really was with the last moment scoring for the Broncos. Then you had to beat Air Force last year. I think Air Force is going to win there at home, but it's going to be closer than people think. I think we'll know a lot more about both these teams for John Lee Eldridge, if he's going to be the main guy as we thought. Is Terrell Vaughn going to step up for Utah State? Robert Briggs, a transfer running back, could have a big game. And Air Force offense, like the running game, hasn't really been elite yet. But then again, that hasn't had to be for the 2 teams they played. They should have been for Sam Houston State, you would think. I know they're a former FCS school, but we talked about them winning the national title in 2021 spring season. They've always been really good overall. They weren't eligible last year for playoffs because they're transitioning up, but it's a decent test. And Air Force, they passed defensively, offensively, not so much. But I'm going Air Force to win. I think it probably hit the over 46.5. I think it'll be reasonably close. I think it'll be 24-20. Actually, if I go 24-20, that's the under. So I'll take the under. 24-20 for Air Force to get this win. Be close to win, and they'll be in first place in Mountain Division, or Mountain West Conference, with the only conference of victory so far, because everything else we're getting to, non-conference late, baby. Next game up here, FS1, 10 local, North Dakota at Boise State. Oh, we probably spent 3 hours on Boise State because, well, they have not been great in the first two games. Not that they're bad, but there's just been some not what people expect. They got blown up by Washington, a very close loss against UCF on a last-second field goal. They are not doing great at defending home turf right now. They're going to be North Dakota. There's no question about it. Like, it's a late morning game, which is kind of odd, 10 a.m. local time, but, you know, TV rules all and everything. So that's kind of what they got to deal with. And the good thing is it's not freaking winter time where it could be 35 degrees at 10 a.m. But for Boise State, what we kind of need to see, or what we definitely need to see, is, okay, what's is running game, is George Lonnie going to be healthy because he didn't play last game? Are they going to hold him out? Because that's the thing, past couple years, all right, what are we doing with Lonnie? Is he going to play? Then Ashley Gentry, so there's no concern about that. Like, there's legit zero concern with him, with Gentry running the ball. Taylor Green hasn't been explosive enough, but I think it's going to be like kind of a get-right game where they're going to come in and just blow the door. I already said it once, but beat the crap out of North Dakota. Because it's something where they need to find their groove before they play San Diego State at Memphis, back-to-back road games. Get into more specifically league play going forward. I just want to see the offense show up because they've only scored 35 points in two games. Outside of Genty, when you look at numbers for like Taylor Green, there's a reason, like I mentioned in our last show with Matt, like a recap, like where is, like Taylor Green, he has potential, people love it, but there's a reason I didn't put him at player of the year yet, just because preseason wise, because I want to see it first, because that's why I went Shavon Cordero from San Jose. But he had the cramping issue, had to leave the game for a bit. He's only, his two TDs, three picks. Another two, okay, I say Power 5 teams because UCF is back, is in the Big 12, so that's technically correct, factually accurate there. But Washington, legit, could be a playoff, could be the win national title. They're that good. But I need to see more from Green if we're going to consider him one of the better quarterbacks in the conference. Like, I haven't done my complete QB rankings yet. I'm still kind of formulating a little bit here. I have a good idea. But for if you look based on performance-wise, he's not at the top. The quarterback play has been okay so far within the league with, obviously, Brandon Traeger, Shavon Cordero playing reasonably well. We got CSU benching a quarterback, Clay Millen's out. We'll get that later. But he's probably in the middle of the pack right now. Potential-wise, he could still be there, but that's what I want to see in this game. There's no point to make half an hour in this matchup, but Genty will be there. Green, finder. Receiving's been reasonably good. They're spreading the ball to Stephen Cobbs, Eric McAllister. But last week, remember, they only threw, I think, to five guys, and only a couple wide receivers are going to tight end and running back. And Genty can't be a leading rusher. It's good. Like, he's legit. He has three touchdowns on the year. He has 370-ish total yards already running and receiving. So he's clearly their playmaker on this team. But you look at North Dakota sitting where they're at. Boise's like 90% chance to win game. They're going to win. There's no question about it. They are 2-0. In the rest of this conference. They beat up on Drake, and they beat Northern Arizona. So there is they're a solid team. And what you need to see about this team, to know about this team, for boys, like, okay, what are they going to clamp down on? What are they going to do? They throw the ball pretty well. Like, their quarterback, Tommy Schuster, completed like 77% of his passes, a couple TDs, no picks. Running game is pretty solid with, like, Gavin Zerbath, who's going 10 yards a carry. But again, half his carries, half his attempts or yardage came on one carry, and he was like 80-yarder. And they do need to find out who Bo Bellquist is because he's tearing it up with 16 catches. So North Dakota's are good. I want to see if they're ranked. I didn't look and see if they're in the FCS top 25. But it's like you could kind of joke and say, okay, where's the Dakota schools? Are they going to be ranked? North Dakota State, the Bison, South Dakota State, Jack Roberts, who beat up on some Mountain West teams recently. Because you got South Dakota State number one, North Dakota State number two, North Dakota number 14 moved up a few spots after being 17 from 2 weeks ago. So it's not a complete pushover team, but I think Boise's like, all right, we're going to take care of business. We want to see if Lonnie's not healthy, don't play him. But I think this will be a game for Taylor Green to play well, to get him out there, and to have everybody just like, okay, let's get their first, because again, zero victories on the year. Boise State doesn't start off 0-2 very often. 0-3, I don't remember the last time was. I didn't bother looking it up because they're playing North Dakota. It's like, what's the legit point of seeing the last time that happened besides to poke fun? I'm like, haha, you're 0-3, which some people who are not Boise fans might be like, okay, we will kind of have fun with that if that's the case. So I think what they'll need to do, it's like, just take it to them. See, that's all they did. Basically, confidence builder. It's like that. They just need to go out there and just beat the pants off North Dakota. I think they're going to do. Yeah, I think they'll win by 30 points. All right, this next game was what I was looking forward to preseason, but now I'm like, oh man, San Diego State going to Oregon State, undefeated Oregon State 2-0, 16 in the country, FS1. Following that North Dakota Boise game, 12:30 local time there in the West Coast at Reser Potato Salad Stadium, Oregon State suing the Pac-12 to keep it together. People could have thought, oh, this is a future conference matchup. Well, it still could be. It just might be the Beavers in the Mountain West. So Oregon State is a 24.5 point favorite. 24.5 points. They have already beaten up on San Jose State. And who else did they beat? Like, let me pull up their slate. Schedule slate here. Oh, yeah, UC Davis, whatever. 55-7, whatever. Jonathan Smith is doing an amazing job there. They have one. DJ Ungalele moved over from Clemson because their offense freaking blows. They move the ball against Duke, but no points, really. Hardly any points. He's no interceptions on the year, and this will be a good test for him in the San Diego State defense. He's slinging the ball pretty well. They're basically good everywhere. Like they have multiple running backs. No, Damian Martin, Deshaun Fenwick, both guys have touchdowns and over 100 yards on the season in a couple games. They have Silas Bolden catching the ball. So when you look at what Oregon State can do, they're a team where I honestly think I put cold hard cash. This may be a joke, but to win the national title, I don't think they will. I'm like, I'll put it like, I think it's like plus 7,000. I'm like, I'll put $5 on that, see what happens. And hey, you never know, the 2-0. But I know what Oregon State can do. And most people, if you pay attention a bit, we talked about them with San Jose State. They're going to throw the ball well. They play pretty good defense because when they played San Jose State, it was a struggle for the Spartans to do a lot of things in that game. Because when they ended up winning, it was a pretty convincing win, 42-17. Very convincing win. Like, they ran the ball well. They threw the ball well. They are getting everybody the ball who needed to get the ball. And San Jose State, like, I figured, oh, they can move the ball. They'll keep it close. If San Jose State can't move the ball, why the heck do we think San Diego State's going to have success throwing the ball with Jalen Maiden, who already has 3 picks on the year in 3 games? They barely beat – they struggled versus Idaho State. They – in their opener, only reason they beat Ohio because Rourke got injured. Last versus UCLA, they only scored 10 points. So I don't see how – I just don't know if they can't keep pace because Oregon State's better than UCLA. Better quarterback, I think, even though the freshman Dante Moore from UCLA torched him for 3 touchdowns and almost 300 yards. So there's that to consider. Aztecs have little to no running game. Like, who's going to step up and be that guy to run the ball? Just asking everybody out there. I'll hang out for a minute, wait for somebody to yell back at their podcast, like, hey, who's going to run the ball and do well? They haven't ran the ball again. Like when Greg Bell in 2020, first half of the year, where they're doing well, they haven't ran the ball well since then. That's over 3 years. This is not a team where I'm not going to be confident in saying they're going to go back to what they've never done. And so I'm just concerned that San Diego State's kind of slowly going back to being, they're just an okay team. Because the 24.5 points is a lot. The reason that would be the case, I'm not confident in that. In either direction, I think. I'd say more toward them covering because their defense is still pretty good. But again, I think Oregon State's offense is better. What they can go up against, because I know UCLA's 5-star quarterback, like I mentioned more a couple moments ago, threw quite well. DG is a little more experienced, obviously played at Clemson, now is the Oregon State new system. Jonathan Smith is a coach I'd put on par with Chip Kelly, if not better, for what he's had to do at Oregon State to kind of build that program up, which usually doesn't get the legit top recruits over there. So it's a matchup where I want to see who's going to stay, like, again, running the ball. When you look at what San Diego State does running the ball, it's clearly, it's okay if I use the word not good at the moment, bad, just okay. Like, what adjective do Aztec fans are okay with me talking about for their team for rushing the ball on offense? Because when you look at what they've done so far, they're 3 games in. They played a good FBS team in Ohio, UCLA's top 25 team, and FCS team. And right now they are spreading out a bit but then again, you don't want Jalen Maiden leading your team in rushing and touchdowns. And Jalen Armstead's doing okay, 5.5 yards a carry. Keenan Christian, about four. Both guys have about 100 yards. So it's not, maybe bad's not the right word, but it's not explosive what we've seen before. And what we've seen at quarterback is made him running better, which is good, clearly. Him throwing the ball is kind of what we expected from a San Diego State quarterback historically, 60%, but three picks isn't great, three TDs fine, won a game. You would like a little bit more. So go back to Christian Chapman there. It's like, okay, don't screw up, but run the ball really elite-wise. That's the thing. They have a quarterback who's okay at the moment, but they don't have that elite ground game. And defensively, they have guys like Xeris Fiasse doing well. Cody Moon is trying to figure things out with his new team. No sacks for him on the year. He has about 15 tackles. Like, they have, we know they have players overall because, like, Fiasse has to, not double digits, I was going to say double digits, a pair of sacks on this team. I'm just wondering what they could do against Oregon State, who shut down a better offense for against San Jose State. So you're telling me Oregon State's facing a lesser offensive team than San Jose State. Clearly, it's with the Aztecs, their offense isn't elite. We know that it's not that great of an offense. And then the defense, which has been not elite. Again, they got players. If they're going to shut down offense that has a good passing attack, a balanced attack, and one of the best coaches on the West Coast, if not in college football, for doing what he could do at a program that's typically not since Mike Riley was there, has been really good. I just don't see San Diego State stepping up to the occasion to be able to do this and on the road, which hostility-wise, they're excited about how the home field advantage really is for Oregon State there. Not this on them. It's not well known as a rocking house, especially the past couple of years with construction and Boise was there, and I think Fresno as well, and half Research Stadium because half of it was being built similar to what Vandy is in their active construction zone. I would like to see San Diego State step up and do something different in this game. I'm just wondering, I just don't know if their defense, Oregon State's going to break through. Like, they didn't look very competitive against UCLA. They gave up too many big plays. And I could see Oregon State having a bunch of big plays and just cruising to a victory. And three touchdowns, that might be okay. I might be okay with that. I just think the defense can't stop. They're Aztecs are just an okay team. Like, they're probably going to a bowl game. I just think Oregon State's really good. And from what I've seen this year, the past couple years in the Pac-12, they're going to be able to be fine and probably win. Maybe, San Jose State, 42-17? I don't think they'll score as many points, but I'm going to go 30. Like, I think Aztecs can cover barely, but I think it'd be like 33-10, which is San Jose State will find their way in the end zone to get a field goal at some point, but not too close.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Vanderbilt at UNLV's next game. CBS Sports Network, 4 p.m. local time in Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. Vandy's a 4.5-point favorite. They are 2-1. Rebels are 1-1 on the year after a loss to Michigan last week, which I take away literally whatever, nothing from that game because it's Michigan. They're really good. But Vandy, we've seen. We saw them play Hawaii. Nearly gave up a big lead, a double-digit lead to the Warriors to pull off and get to win. They've only beaten Alabama A&M since then. They lost to Wake 36-20 last week in a school of the Smarty Pants match-off. So last time we saw Vanderbilt, Hawaii literally shut down their running attack. And for the year, they've improved since then, Vanderbilt, with like Patrick Smith and Cedric Alexander leading the way. Both the guys are doing fine, but they just couldn't run the ball. That might be an area where UNLV, where the guys like Brennan Scott can like, okay, that's a spot where we could slow them down. Quarterback's okay. Actually, more than okay. You have with A.J. Swan there, eight TDs, three picks. He has been sacked six times, so twice a game. So there's that potential for the Rebels' defense to come up and make big plays and just get after the quarterback with Swan. Because 61%, that's fine. That's okay. But the main guy, like, okay, he throws the ball pretty well. They run the ball, yeah, fine. Passing up, catching the ball. Will Shepard and Jaden McGowan are their guys. You gotta stop it. You know, especially Shepard. 6 touchdowns on the year. He has 20 catches. McGowan has no touchdowns, but 18 receptions. And I guess London Humphreys, we watch out for him. He has a couple of TDs. But they do have deep plays. They have about, I think, 6 plays of 40 or more, if I'm correct on here. Or no, excuse me. 1, 2, 3, 4. At least 4 plays of 35 or more yards. So they are fairly explosive. And UNLV could take away from Michigan last week. Okay, we're playing. We're overmatched. Let's do what we can do. In that last drive, they went down, scored a touchdown with Doug Brumfield. But this is a game where it's more on the level of a good matchup because UNLV crushed Bryant, got to return crushing versus Michigan. Hosting Vanderbilt, so at home, we'll see how that works out for them. But I want to see the go-go offense against a team where Vanderbilt is, again, more on their type of level. Vanderbilt is a slight favorite, but Brumfield is all right. But then you have the running game, which is it is getting about 4.5 yards a carry. That's fine. Not a problem there. But again, they played Michigan, so they're throwing a little bit more. But like, is it going to be Jaden Thomas, who has 13 carries, Courtney Reese, 14? Like, their carries are kind of all over the place. And there hasn't been a guy who stepped up yet. If that makes sense. Like, there hasn't been, like, the main guy. And so that's going to be a thing where, okay, who's going to run the ball in this offense? Because we saw when Brendan Marion was to Hawaii, like, Calvin Tyler was back there throwing, catching the ball, punt returns, doing all sorts of things to get him the ball. So that's what they're going to really need to do in this matchup, is see what running back, okay, you're throwing the ball. They're going to, like, how is he going to get the ball? So that's the thing, like, whoever it's going to be, who's going to step up, who's going to be the guy, who's going to make sure that this offense that we're all excited to see, what's really going to happen? So, like, what's the situation going to be? And that's what I want to see with this UNLV offense. Because Vanderbilt, Hawaii hung with them. That's the thing, too, I'm wondering. With Schrager from Hawaii, he slung the ball outside of that interception, like at the goal line on that stupid fade route, which is not Cole Turner back there, not the former Nevada tight end who would catch whatever he wanted. I just think this could be. I'm going upset alert here. I think UNLV is going to win outright because Vanderbilt's been okay. If they could slow down those secondary could slow down the receivers on Vanderbilt. That's going to go a long way, and Rebels got to, on their own part, find out who's going to run the ball, who's going to be the guy in a game where, okay, that's going to be finally evenly matched. But the offense, again, I'm reading here in the Las Vegas Review Journal, headline's perfect. UNLV in search of offense and identity as Vandy waits. So it's going to take time for this Brendan Marion offense to get going. Because I get it, winning 44-14 over Bryant, like, okay, whatever. And then losing also to Michigan by 4 touchdowns, again, whatever. Coach Odom's like, oh, I've seen progress. We've seen this. They're learning to play with one another. Because there are, again, transfers come in. That's everywhere. It's not just a Rebel thing. It's more prominent other locations. But I think it's going to take time for this offense to get going because it's so unique. And it's not all on Doug Brumfield because he was sacked 5 times by Michigan. But again, Michigan's defense is really good. So it's going to be a situation where, okay, protect the quarterback a bit better, which they should in this game. And some of the issues last week is a couple guys who didn't play last week in injuries, like your left guard, Alani Makale, didn't play versus Michigan injury. You had Jalen St. John, didn't play against Bryant, limited against Michigan as well. He did return to practice this week, the left tackle. So getting a couple of those guys back versus Vanderbilt, hopefully that can alleviate the quarterback situation where he's not being pressured, not being sacked. And it's just hard to play how you want to play against a team that's really good like Michigan. So I think they'll be able to move the ball. We'll see a lot. Here's the thing. This is like a game like, okay, we'll get to know you. Maybe this is a get to know you Saturday for all these teams. Like, who's Utah State Air Force? Boise is going to show up. Is San Diego State going to have a running attack and slow down Oregon State defense? Offense that's really good. But I think UNLV is going to win. But I think it's going to be like 24-20, like a low-scoring game. I go over under 59, but I think Rebels are going to do it. I think being back at home, getting the offensive line back healthy, there'll be a situation where if they could just slow down the Vandy receiving group a bit to a degree, that's their main key to win. Like, slow down those guys and force them to run and don't let Swan beat you in the air. So, next game, I have no idea why this line is what it is. It's 5 p.m. Mountain Time. I guess Toledo, are they Eastern in Ohio? 7 Eastern. I'll just mention that time. I don't know where Toledo's at. It's in Ohio, obviously. I know that. I think that's Eastern. I don't know my time zones. I'm in the Mountain Time Zone. That's always forgotten. So, excuse me for not knowing Eastern Time Zone. It's on ESPN Plus, so make sure you have that subscription. I'm not sure why Toledo is a 7-point home favorite. What am I missing, folks? Like, what is the situation to where Toledo is a 7-point favorite? Is it because they scored 71 against Texas Southern, who's not a good team? 10 touchdowns in that game? Is it because they played Illinois to a close loss on the road 30-28 to an Illinois team that was run off the field versus Kansas a couple weeks ago? And our 1-1 on the year. I'm trying to think Kansas score yet. Well, maybe not run off the court. What do I say? 34-23. But I honestly not sure. Is it because San Jose State lost to Oregon State and USC? Like, those are one of the toughest schedules in the country. And when they played last week. Jeez, I'm spacing. There's so many games, so many teams to talk about here. Cal Poly, 15-3. So I'm wondering if people are just sleeping on San Jose State just because, oh, they got their 1-2, but they played 2 top 20 teams, and USC is in the top 5. And they actually there's lots of things to like in the USC loss. Nick Nash had multiple touchdowns. Javon Cordero scrambled to get a big first down. They were throwing the ball reasonably well. They have run the ball good. As better than I thought with Kyrie Robinson. I know it was Cal Poly had a big game last week. But when you look at what Toledo does, like, okay, their quarterback's really good. Daquan Finn, only has 1 pick on the year. The running game is pretty good, explosive. Like, they have 3 guys. You go watch for Jacquez Stewart, Daquan Finn, obviously QB, Penny Boone there. All those guys have about 70 yards, multiple touchdowns for them. So they spread the ball, running the ball that way. And for San Jose State, we mentioned they've lost, like, Cade Hall, Vonnie Fajoko, former defensive players years in the conference. They're gone. That's the thing where the defense for San Jose State, we need next guy to step up. Not we, but like that team itself, the Spartans. Coach Brennan, like, okay, what players are going to get it done? But Toledo, they're a team that the Rockets, Jason Kendall, like, they throw the ball. They want to move the ball in the air, and they do that. And they've had to play a couple different guys, like Tucker Gleason got some, as last week when they're beating up on Texas Southern, so it doesn't really count. But they protect the quarterback, so can the defensive front for San Jose State get to Finn's, only been sacked once this year. And can they stop the two? They have 2 receivers they need to keep a hold of. Junior Vandeross III and Jajura Newton both have about 100 yards in those couple games. But they have a lot of guys who catch touchdowns. Like Larry Steffens has a couple touchdowns on 5 catches. So that's what they need. Who they need to look for defensively for the Spartans to stop. On offense, it's always comes down to, and I'll say it until I'm blue in the face for a million years, until whatever, Kyrie Robinson needs to have a good game. But they also have Kwali Conley. So they have a double-edged two running back system back there, which is great. Like, Conley actually has more yards to transfer up from Utah Tech. But Robinson had a big game last week, so you have those two running backs. So I don't need to harp on Robinson being, hey, be better, be awesome, be good. You're this guy. You're out there doing it and being successful. They have Shavon Cordero, the best quarterback in the conference. has been sacked 4 times, only completing 59% of his passes, but he's now at a point where he's facing a team again, similar to UNLV, a team that's more on the level. You got Nick Nashville leads away, but he has 14 catches, but he hasn't done much. Like, those 3 touchdowns were in week 0, I guess, from USC. But since then, he only had 1 catch versus Cal Poly, which, whatever. He did have 7 versus Oregon State. He just hasn't found the end zone. It hasn't been as explosive. After the USC game, where he went 6 for 89, he has 6 catches for 37 yards and no scores. So maybe he's just taking a step back, or teams are focusing on him a bit more, and he's trying to figure out what to do, because remember, he was quarterback and was kind of like that, not gadget guy, but like change of pace type of QB, if you want to go that route for naming position types. And the defense isn't bad. Like, Trey Smith, we know, is a dude, 2.5 sacks. He's legit. What I think they're going to do, end up doing this game, I'm going to call the, maybe I'm being a homer. I think San Jose State's going to win outright. I have no clue why this is 7-point line. They're experienced. They played tough teams, harder schedule. They got back last week with a good FCS one, take care of business. It's going to be a lot of points, I do think. I think it's going to be like, I'm going to go 35-31 for San Jose State to get the victory. I think they're going to show up, score points, and get things done. Next game. This might be a quick one. Wyoming at Texas. The line's ballooned to -30 for Texas at home. What is going on, people? It's on Longhorn Network, so if you're one of the 8 people that can get it in its final season when the Longhorns go into the SEC, sure, watch it. I don't see this being – I know Texas is good. They beat Alabama. I guarantee that's where it's coming. Like, it's going to be a situation where it's not going to be super close, but Wyoming, okay, they did beat Texas Tech overtime. Texas Tech, kind of a dark horse to win the Big 12. Kinda. Barely. Wyoming does have a good defense. Like, we've seen what they can do. Texas has Quinn Ewers. They have all the playmakers. Like, Texas has every single advantage in this game. Quinn Ewers' quarterback is going to throw the ball well. But I do think, Mountain West going to. Whatever, if you're not a Mountain West guy listening, whatever, it's thank you, appreciate it. But Texas hasn't run the ball all that great. 3.5 yards a carry. They're leading on Xavier Worthy catching the ball, Jatavion Sanders. They don't even have Isaiah Nayor, a former Wyoming guy in this game, only has 1 catch on the air, 14 yards. He's supposed to be like their deep threat, hasn't done much. But Worthy's the guy they got to stop. And then also deep threat Sanders, tight end. And then also you have Aloney Mitchell, who has 3 TDs. Like, again, I keep saying like, I apologize. I think some Texas fans are like, oh, we're going to see Arch Manning, we're going to see Malik Murphy in this game, second half. I have no illusion Wyoming's going to pull the upset. That would be awesome if they did a top 5 win. That would be one of the biggest wins probably in not conference, but history of the Wyoming Cowboy football of the world. If they're going to do it, Peasley, guess they're more efficient. They have to control the ball, running, and can't just run the ball only. And Peasley cannot... Coach Bull cannot, or Tim Polasek, also the OC, cannot do, let's do 7 design runs with Peasley getting his head blown off. Cannot do that against his team, against his defense. That's really good for Texas. Like, David Gamonetta, really good. Jalen Ford, really good. Anthony Hill Jr., really good. All these guys, Ethan Burke, really good. All these guys have multiple sacks on the year. Well, Ford does not yet. Double-digit tackles for the season, but he's a key player, has an interception on the year, playing that linebacker spot for the Horns. This is a game where, okay, let's make incremental progress to show where Wyoming can win in spots. Wyoming's definitely going to have Peasley not complete 50-something percent of his passes. He has to be higher if that's the case. They're going to have to run the ball if they can. With the new clock rules, I know there's fewer possessions, so maybe they can limit that by running it here and there a little bit less. With, like, Sam Scott's doing pretty good. DQ James, they're getting players back on this team. So I'm trying to remember who's returning for this matchup. I have my notes here. But they have enough running backs in this game where they're able to move the ball a little bit and just kind of show that they're, hey, we can hang with a Big 12 team. We can hang with a future SEC team, a top 5 team in the country that could potentially win the college football playoff. But what they need to really do is, like, obviously Peasley is one of the key players, like, super senior. I think it was 6th, 7th year guy, who knows. He did have 3 touchdowns last week with Portland State, but again, it's like, who cares? Texas Tech has given me one to look out for, to what he did. So, yeah, they can't go point for point, but on offense, another key player is center Nofafia Tulafano. Apologies. That's a big deal because there's a million fans at Darrell K. Royal Stadium there in Austin. They're probably just silent count, so they got to basically be on the same page. No fumbles, no miscommunications. And they have a couple guys I haven't mentioned yet. Like I mentioned, Byron Murphy. They also have Devondre Sweat for Texas up front. So having that exchange is a key because you don't want to have a stupid, oh crap, fumble, bad snap, scoop and score, recover the ball quickly. That's got to be, exchange is got to be simple. So they're not going to do any sort of audible count. It'll be silent count the whole game. So that's a kind of, it is definitely a key area for what's going to be needed to be successful for this team. I've already mentioned guys like Xavier Worthy, top receiving threats, but they have multiple guys who I mentioned. Like, not quite as good as Ohio State with Marvin Harrison Jr., but they got a good trio of players out there. And then also stopping Ethan Burke. So you have like Frank Crum and Caden Barnett have to slow and stop any pass attack that comes their way. Rush attack, I should say. But I want to see what the defense can do. Like, can they get after Quinn Yurts? You've got to about get to the quarterback. Can all these guys defensively make plays and at least slow down Texas for a little bit? I do think 30 is crazy. I think it opened at 28.5. It was 29. Now it's 30. I do think Wyoming can make some plays out of it. But here's the thing. If they start off slow like versus Texas Tech down 14-0, this is going to be a 50-10 defeat. I just think Wyoming's defense will provide enough resist. Offense, if they score 13 points, I'll be surprised. I'm going to go 33-13. Texas is just going to kind of 35-13, actually. Texas will kind of sleepwalk through the game and just take care of business and move on. Do we have Hawaii at Oregon, which, oh my gosh, this game is going to be, I like Oregon a lot, maybe more than Texas. Hawaii's 1-2 on the road, Pac-12 Network, so get our FUBO free trial if you want to check that out. This is a 37.5-point line. What? Ridiculous. That is beyond what anybody would expect for this game. For me, because we've seen Braden Schrager, like he, Braden Schrager. He has almost 1,000 passing yards this year. I know he's played one extra game. I do think Hawaii's, with the run and shoot, they're just going to, obviously, run is optional in this Timmy Ting run and shoot, but they do need to find some balance of running game on some level just to keep Oregon honest to agree, because if they're just going to throw the whole time, Oregon might, there's two things, ways you think about it. We're going to blitz 6 guys and cover the 5 receivers or whatever, just play single coverage and bring everybody. Or they could just sit back and like rush 2 or rush 3 guys and just blanket the field so Schrager cannot throw the ball to anybody. I do think he'll have success. He'll be throwing the ball quite well. But Oregon, Bo Nix, he is such a good quarterback. They have the Heisman campaign up in New York City, similar to Joey Harrington. Oh, jeez, got my J's mixed up. From a while ago down Times Square. They did beat Texas Tech 38-30, beat up a Portland State 81-7. There are obviously more in between for that game, for that team. But Hawaii's going to be in a world of hurt for this offense, their defense, because their defense isn't all that good. Like, when they played Vanderbilt, let me rephrase it. The rush defense played well versus Vanderbilt. So that was helpful. And Bucky Irving is the main rusher for Oregon so far this year. He has a couple touchdowns, and Jordan James as well. Both those guys have about 100 yards. Irving 157. They each have 3 TDs, both averaging well over 6 yards a carry. Irving has 10.5 with a long of 56, which is for 1/3 of his yards. But they have that. But then, like, okay, running game fine. 7.1 is good because they have big plays, great. But Trey Guardian, Troy Franklin, Gary Bryant, Bucky Irving also is in the backfield guy with 10 catches. Tez Johnson. Noah Winningham, running back who catches the balls a lot. Not even a guy who, he has only 7 rushes. Part of that, most of that, I know Portland State, but they have a lot of guys who are able to make plays. They do not get for quarterback. They're okay. They have 4 sacks on the air. Nothing crazy after the couple games. But I just don't like this Hawaii defense, man. This is going to be a long day. This is, while it's, I kind of joke, 37.5, that's huge. It's huge. it might be warranted because they only beat New Albany by 11. They lost to Stanford by 13. They almost beat Vanderbilt, which is showing okay. I think they'll move the ball in the air a bit. I could see Shager having like 250 yards just because the amount of times you're going to throw the ball, how many possessions I'll get because Oregon will move and score. But he also has 5 picks on 10 TDs, so he'll get picked off a bit. I just, man, Oregon's offense, like, it's going to just, I don't care if the Oregon's defense is good or not, because sometimes it is. It's just Oregon. It just kind of depends what Oregon can do defensively. But Texas Tech put up 30. Texas Tech isn't bad. This could be an offensive showcase. I'm going to go 50-10 Oregon. I think they're just going to roll. And apologies to Hawaii fans out there who are not happy with this prediction, but I think that's the case. They're just going to get beat by a lot of points. Next game. All right. Rivalry game. New Mexico State, New Mexico Lobos are actually a small favorite. It's a Mountain West Network game, so check that out. New Mexico State, not as good as people thought. They figured with them making the bowl game last year, with Jerry Kill not taking over, but being back, that it would be continuing on upward trajectory of them being about a bowl eligible team in that range. But so far, they are 1-2. They have lost to UMass, not good. Lost double digit points to Liberty. Beat Western Illinois, good. Awesome. Rival game is interesting because New Mexico State has typically done better in this matchup versus the Lobos. But one thing we're looking to see here, and we want to know, is with Dylan Brooks, I was thinking Dylan Brooks, Team Canada, NBA guy, Feeble, what he's been doing. No, Dylan Hopkins, quarterback for New Mexico, and what they're going to do with this newish offense that we kind of got to see a bit. Because when they played Texas A&M, it's like, no. Like, there's very little to learn that what this offense could be. And then they beat Tennessee Tech. So, again, this is kind of the get-to-know-you Saturday, this particular matchup versus the Aggies of Mexico State and Las Cruces, to where, okay, what are they going to do? But historically, it's interesting. 73 wins for New Mexico over New Mexico State. However, while the Lobos did win last year, or excuse me, New Mexico State won last year, this game's always close. Because 2022, Mexico State won. Then you had 21, New Mexico won. Nothing in 20. And then three of the past four have gone toward the Aggies. And then 7 of the past 9, I think, or 10 have gone to Mexico State. So they've, New Mexico, sorry. I'm looking at Wikipedia, and they have cherry and silver, which are Lobos colors, going over. Like, when they show, like, the graph of who's won. New Mexico, I mean, for some reason I thought New Mexico State won more than they have in this type of series. So, New Mexico State did win last year, yeah. So, I apologize. For some reason I thought New Mexico State has won a bit more. But it's always been close. Like, you've had the 32-31 game in 2016, 30-28 game in 17. This is both Aggie wins. The only big blow was 42-25 in 18. And then last year, 21-9. Like, there's only been a couple of double-digit games. It's always reasonably close, so I want to see what Hopkins could do in their type of offense they're throwing out there. Because she had 4 touchdowns. She had Kroski Merritt run for 3. And they beat Tennessee Tech by a lot. They helped Danny Gonzalez get a big victory. He's sort of on the hot seat just because not having so many victories over the past couple years. But here's the thing where New Mexico can make hay. They had Mexico State this week. Possible win. I think they're going to win. They go to UMass the week after. They could beat the Minutemen there. Then they start league play. So if they go 3-1 in non-conference play, that's really good. But I am excited. Like, I'm going to tune into the Mountain West Network. We're going to watch this game and see what the Lobos and Hopkins can do, because I'm just wondering what the Lobos, if they're finally going to ever have a pulse of a team under Danny Gonzalez, because past couple coaches, it's not gone great, obviously. You had Rocky Long leave to Syracuse after kind of mentoring Gonzalez for the first couple of seasons. But a couple of players Lobos need to look out for on this Aggies team is clearly Monte Watkins, one of the best running backs in their other team. And Diego, because he has about big play capability, but also probably Star Thomas is their main running back. So they have two guys. And even Jamani Jones has done reasonably well. They're at 6.5 yards of carry, so that's going to be the key thing they're going to want to stop overall. Their big play capabilities, because they have 5 plays over 25 or more rushing this year. Quarterback play with Diego Pavia has been it's been hit or miss. Offensive line's terrible. 6 sacks on the year. Picked off 4 times. Only 6 touchdowns. Only 6 is fine in 3 games. That's okay. He's completing a good rate of 65%, but if they can get after the quarterback, like get after Pavia, That'll just be a big key. And then if they give the quarterback, okay, quarterback gets sacked, gets hurried. Can they run the ball if there's already pressure on the quarterback? So it always can kind of snowball. But if they are able to sling it down the field, you got Jonathan Brady, Trent Hudson, and the guys like, okay, what do we got here? They're big play capability, especially Hudson with a trio of touchdowns. And they throw the ball deep. Like there's a 50-yarder, 80-yarder, 40-yarder. So they have multiple plays over 40-plus yards. So Lobos, well, it's kind of like a boom or bust for the Aggies offense, it seems like. So if they can get after Pavia and make him throw quickly, odds of getting a deep play, not there if he's getting sacked or being pressured. So I think the keys for Lobos are defensive line, get after the quarterback, which these are always dumb and simple. Like keys, oh, keys, score more points, turnover, blah, blah, blah. But I do think they can get after Pavia for the quarterback and give that defensive confidence. And I want to see what the Lobos offense can do. Because the Mexico State defensively, when you look at, again, they're 1-2 on the year. Look who they played. They beat in, I believe, what, the FCS team in Western Illinois. We mentioned UMass beat them up, Liberty. I don't think there'll be a ton of points. It'll be a rival game, but I'll go 28-24 to Mexico. I think that'll be the case. Now we have the college game day. ESPN kickoff is coming to Boulder to watch Colorado host Colorado State because week 3 on the national slate. Nothing crazy, and why not go to Coach Prime? Why not? So I did find out, as we're recording right now, at our chat GM, Adam Schefter, who obviously ESPN guy, used to work in Denver, he put out a tweet, fighting words. So if you ever see Deion Sanders, obviously this year, he's always wearing shades. That's what he does. Blah, blah, blah. He did an indoor press conference. So Jay Norvell, I don't know what he's doing here. He goes, when I talk to grownups, I take my hat and glasses off. That's the way my mother taught me. It's like, oh boy. Deion Sanders, like, nobody thought Colorado would be this good. Me and Matt, I know I did pretty good. I think CSU could win. Colorado, who cares if they had roster turnover? They're one of the worst rosters in the country. Not the case. Drew Sanders doing quite well. Travis Hunter playing about seemingly every snap in Mankind and more than one college football game. If you talked about him, oh, he's played in 4 games this weekend? He played in 200 snaps a game? That's what you're thinking about? Half kidding, but he plays a lot. He's quite good offensively, elite defender. Like, he wasn't as great last week in their game, but the opener, when they played Nebraska, he was fine. Good, but not what he did for TCU. But any press conference I've seen Coach Deion Sanders in, he's wearing shades, is wearing glasses. So I don't know. Jay Norvell's probably just screwing around. And, like, he probably wants some motivation. He's like, get my name out there. They're coming to see Coach Prime. I'm like, well, no, they're coming to see me. Apologies here. Sorry, I got a random text I was looking at. Yeah, I'm not pausing it. We're talking more about Colorado State. So the glasses thing, that's pretty funny. My mom told me to take glasses and hat off when I'm inside. Does that give CSU 4 points more? I don't know. That's it's all good. It's just funny. It's like he's trying to motivate. I don't know if it's motivation thing, just screwing around, but it is funny to see Deion Sanders wear those the entire time, no matter what, like indoor shades, like that dude. But you know who Primetime is. That's what he's done with the Niners, the Braves, the Cowboys, the Falcons, all these teams. Was he at the Yankees for a hot minute? I don't know. But the game itself, so the big thing about CSU, they are not starting Clay Millen, which, okay, we thought he'd be the guy after last year, what he did, completing some record 70-ish%. Okay. I see a thing from Stephen A. Smith. It's a video. I wish I could read what it was, but maybe I'll do a quick article on it in a minute. But it's just mentioned. Like he said, what? Reacts to the shot at Deion Sanders. Oh, boy. But this is game 2 for the Rams. They had a bye last week after losing to Washington State 50-24. After that game, Coach Orvell a couple days ago, early in the week, I think it was Monday, I want to say, it's going with Clay Millen's not playing with Braden Fowler Nicolesi is going to be the starter. He does have only 2 touchdown passes for the Rams this year. Does have a pick. Washington's a pretty good team. They beat Wisconsin last week, a ranked team. So having Avery Morrow run for 29 yards week 1, not ideal, but we'll see what the Rams can do against the Buffs defense, which TCU scored 42 points against them. Nebraska scored points against them. So I do think there's a space for Rams to score some points and move the ball. One matchup which will be amazing to see, I'm assuming, Travis Hunter will match up with a Torrey Horton, who is a legit NFL. That'll be, if you're like an NFL person, like, oh, what there's some games that are just ideal. But Horton versus Hunter will be an interesting matchup to see because Travis Hunter was number one overall recruit 2 years ago, which Jackson, with Deion Jackson State over like FSU, like last week at Flip Crazy, comes to see you playing both sides of the ball. So that will be a matchup to see if Horton can break through. But also Justice Ross Simmons, who we discussed before, like all of our previews and stuff, is leading the team with a touchdown, 5 catches, but Horton, or excuse me, 123 yards, only 5 catches compared to Horton's 9 for 81. But I do think there is some potential for the offense to move against some points games of confidence. Just that defense, man, to give 50 to Wazoo, Colorado with like Shedeur Sanders throwing the ball. They have multiple receivers. They have multiple running backs. They have offenses. Clearly, they've exceeded any expectations people had for this team. They figured to be at least a year plus. But in a portal area, I guess you can, well, you know, get new players instantly, and turnover roster is not a big deal anymore. It's like it take a couple years with this and what Lincoln Riley's done, coaches at this higher level. Like, okay, you have an offseason, go get your guys and win 4 more games. We'll see. The Buffs still may go 6-6 because the Pac-12 is brutal. But a couple running backs, it's Dylan Edwards, Hankerson, those guys have done reasonably well. The running game's been actually not great, 1.7 yards per carry. And Shedeur has been sacked 11 times. So the offensive line, with all the yards he's put up completing, despite being sacked that many times, still has no interceptions, 6 touchdowns in 2 games, 77 completion rate. So the Rams could, theoretically, you think the running game has been, besides Dylan Edwards, who's been pretty good, nobody else has been great. It's been all the passing. So if somehow the Rams secondary can cause pressure, or not secondary, but defense can cause pressure, and secondary just make some plays, perhaps against guys like, again, they have guys like Travis Hunter, who's doing pretty good receiving, 14 catches, obviously. Not as much last week, but they have Xavier Weaver, Jimmy Horn Jr. They also have, like, again, Dylan Edwards out of the backfield catches passes with that. He did have a 75-yarder, so half those yards came on catch, essentially, for that TD he has. And he has 3 on the ground. Or, excuse me, running back has 3 catches. Like, you know, whatever, ground player, running back gets 3 receptions. Offense is too explosive, but I do think the Rams' defense could maybe do something here. If they get the QB and stop the running game, that might, clearly, Colorado could win by passing the ball only if they need to. But if you want to see some progress, I do think the Rams could make something up front. And then also on offense, Buffs has given up, 42 to TCU in the opener. And then only 14 last week versus Nebraska. So we'll see how that plays out totally. But I do think they could have some success. 23.5 probably seems about right. So I think it's going to be probably 40-10. I hope Rams can do something and get a hold of the Buffs and make some plays, but I don't know, man. We'll see. Next game, Fresno and Arizona State. This is one of the better games because, yeah, it is a Pac-12 school. It's 7:30 Pacific on FS1. Fresno's a 3-point road favorite because Arizona State, under Kenny Dillingham, does not look all that great starting Jalen Rashard at quarterback, true freshman there. They lost to a bad Oklahoma State team. They barely beat Southern Utah where they had probably could have lost that game. So this is a matchup where I want to see Mikey Keene, what Keene can do throwing the ball, what the next running back up for Fresno State can do. But when we look at Arizona State real quick, like Kansas QB mixed up. Yeah, been okay, not completing the ball great. Four sacks. Their biggest weapon, I would have to say, probably be Cameron Scadabo, who has 4.5 yards a carry, 133 yards. They have a pretty decent receiving group with 4 guys with 5 or more catches, including tight end Jalen Connors. With them struggling versus Southern Utah and not able to put up all the points against Oklahoma State, man, the offense is just, they have a couple players, but not anything that I'm super confident about because, again, Rashada being true freshman, it's like, okay, what can Coach Tedford dial up on defense to make him confused, stack him a few more times? Now have the running game go well because they have no explosives on the ground game. Like their longest run of the year is 17 yards. That's nothing special. And one was by a random backup, Elijah Badger, who carried the ball twice. So there's no real confidence at the ground game. And defensively, they're better defensively than that, you think, because giving up only 27 points, it's not elite defense, but it's not bad. But I just think what Fresno State, 2-0, which is great. I think they'll be 3-0 after this game. And again, the Eastern Washington game, there is cause for concern for them struggling versus the Eagles, who is a good FCS team, but not elite like they used to be. And so they can't miss field goals, can't have bad penalties. They just got to have a better start to the game. Like they beat Purdue 39-35, where they were back
trailing early on. So I believe in that game where they're down 21-17 at halftime. They're down here and there. I think a better start would be fruitful for them. It is on the road, so there's that to consider. But like Arizona State crowd, pretty good. But I think Fresno is just a better all around team. Like there's a reason they're a road favorite. They have the better quarterback, Mikey Keene. They have the better, I'm going to say, running defense, like guys like Cam Lockridge back there. They have guys like, who's leading the team, like all these guys, but Devo Bridger's playing well, Dean Clark, they have all these guys. Lavelle Bailey made the interception for the game winner against Eastern Washington in overtime. So they have guys out there. They only have one pick on the year, so that's not great. Defensively, so that's something they need to work on. Maybe they can pick off the ASU quarterback more. They only have one sack as well, so that is a concern. Defensively, making big explosive plays, getting after the quarterback or TFLs or sacks, are not really doing a good job on that aspect. So that is something that they'll definitely need to look at. But offense, they'll be fine. Eric Brooks is doing great receiving the ball, a couple of touchdowns on the year. Elijah Gilliam looks like the guy at running back. And then also Devin Rivers, who's done a couple carries, doing okay. But it's going to be the bulk of the carries are Gilliam. Mikey Keene completing the ball quite well. Not many picks. 5 sacks in 2 games. Not great. If that could be shored up a little bit, that should be okay. And maybe we've seen him run around. It's similar when they had J.K. and like quarterback getting hit, getting a little bit here and there, beat up just because of the offensive line. If that could be tightened up just a little bit here or there, that would be a way to go and go a long way. But I'm just going to say, I don't think Fresno State is going to be explosive and just crush them. But I'm going to go 28-20 Fresno State. I don't see why they can't put up 4 touchdowns in. Basically, kind of, it'll be only a game like, they're hanging around, but not really. I think they'll just kind of walk away with that one. Final game of the weekend, Kansas going to Nevada. Yes, a home game against a Big 12 team for the Wolfpack. 8:30 Mountain Time. I guess that's 7:30 Pacific local. CBS Sports Network. Kansas is a 28-point favorite. Now you look at this, I'm like, Kansas football, which I know I'm using an old term, like, they're not very good. They're actually quite good, but 28 points. It's like, okay, and they're at home too. It's like, oh my goodness. There's a couple of things going on here. Before we get to the game, there's an interesting promotion they're running at Mackey Stadium. So to get people to show up, which can be difficult in all these places across the country in college football, is that they're going to, if you buy a ticket to the Kansas game, they're offering free UNLV tickets if you buy a Kansas game because they think they'll get their butt kicked. But the UNLV game's huge rival, the Cannons on the online, everything. So last week, their biggest draw, 19,852 home opener, largest versus Idaho, which they got their butt kicked. Largest crowd during Ken Wilson's year plus, he's been there. And the biggest game since they hosted last time UNLV. So what the Wolfpack are doing now, GA ticket to Kansas game that comes with, general admission ticket to the Kansas game that come with a GA spot for UNLV is 50. I'm not sure that's parking. That's worded oddly. There must be something else. But if you buy that ticket, you can get a free ticket to the UNLV game. So they want people to show up. They do have a 6-game losing streak, unfortunately. Jayhawks are not ranked, but they're getting votes in consideration. They haven't played. And Kansas looking for the first 3-0 start since almost 30 years, since 91-82. So that'll be interesting when they come to town, how many people show up and how it will just be for this matchup. But I don't know, man. Like Kansas, they played Illinois last week. And I think we talked about before, obviously, they won by a couple points, by a little bit here, but they kind of pulled away. Their offense, they have probably one of the best quarterbacks in the Big 12, one of the best running backs in the Big 12. They beat Missouri State and Illinois. But Jalen Daniels is really good. But he's only been sacked twice. He only has 2 touchdowns, which is not great, but he's completing every pass imaginable. They don't need him to when they have a dual running back in Devin Neal and Daniel Hishaw. So I don't know what Nevada can do to stop or slow those guys down. The whole running game is averaging over 6 freaking yards a carry. Like, Devin Neal, okay, he has 214 yards. On 9.3 average per carry, it's like he's just torching it. He does have a big, huge 50-yarder on the air. But they have him, then they have a bevy of receivers. 4 receivers have 6 or more catches. Like, look out for Luke Grimm. He has a touchdown. You have Lawrence Arnold, almost as, like, these guys are 7, 6, 7, 8, 9 catches each. They have at least 3 passes over 45 yards. They're a deep threat. They're explosive. They run the ball well, and everything basically opposite of what Nevada does. And they also defensively 7 sacks on the year in just a couple of games. I know one was versus an FCS team, Missouri State, but Nevada, their offensive line's getting to step up in this game because when you look at the protection they're giving to Brendan Lewis here, quarterback, he's been sacked 4 times. Not bad, but different offensive line, different defensive line they're facing. Nevada kind of runs the ball okay with Sean Dollars. Jamal Bell's their best threat by far in offense, but a third of his yards came on 1 catch. And Kansas defense, like, okay, maybe they can make some noise that way. Defense, not terrible. And Brendan Lewis is only completing 56% of his passes, so it's like, what are we doing here? I don't know what to, like, is he going to get better? Because the Idaho game, like, he loses to freaking Idaho by multiple scores. Like, what are we doing here, Nevada? Like, Ken Wilson, you're in trouble. And this game, Kansas probably win, blowout fashion. I do hope that Nevada has, like, okay, all right, here we go. We lost to Idaho. Not a good game, boys. We lost. We got to figure something out. Can't get beat like this again. We're playing a team from the Big 12 that'll probably win, be at worst a bowl team, probably could win up to 8 games. How are we going to handle and respond? That's what I think they need to say. Okay, what's the response level for this type of game? What are we doing here? What's going to be the situation if we're to make us successful? That's what Ken Wilson has to figure out. I'm looking for a couple things. I don't know. It's tough to see. I guess you have with a couple of sacks. Like, I'm gonna butcher this name, Tongaki Mate Leona, which Matt's here to tell me that right name pronouncer, but that's what that is. So he has a sack and double digit tackles on the year. So there's that to consider. Offensive line, 4 sacks isn't bad, but you're playing a better front. Sean Dollars, like I said, okay, I guess Jamal Bell, you got to get him the ball a lot more. He's crushing the team in reception, 16-4. Spencer Curtis, the next level guy, or excuse me, John Jackson at 5, Curtis has 4. So obviously the game plan is get the ball to Bell, be more efficient completing the ball with getting to at least, can we get to 60%, Brendan Lewis? Is that something we can do? I just think Kansas is going to be too much in this matchup. It's not the same old Kansas. I had a guy at work, it's like, oh, Kansas, they're terrible. I'm like, dude, they're not bad. They're a good team. They have all-star cuts on the bowl game. They do this, they do that. They are not the same old pushover type of team. They're a solid team. So that's why I'm wondering about the cover situation because it's 28 at home. I guess I got to go. Man, I got to go Kansas. It's going to be like 30-3. Oh, no, wait, that covers, so maybe I'm wrong. I think it'll be 40-10. I'll go with that score. I think I mentioned that score one of these prior games. But I'll go 40-10. That's what it'll be for Kansas to get to victory. And it's going to be a tough week. Mount West has 1, 2, 3 Power 5 teams. 4, 5, 6, 7 teams against Power Conference. Plus they have a conference game between Air Force and Utah State. So that'll do it for this week. Check us out. Everything we do at MWBar.com. All previews we have, rankings, all sorts of different cool stuff up on the site for everybody to look at and view. If you like this, hey, give a subscribe, you know, to do listen, tell a friend. And we'll be back in a couple days to recap everything on the podcast and just check again, MWR.com, Twitter, Mount MWCWire as well, to go through all the fun stuff there we do and how to screw around on game day. And we'll see you next time, folks.